Welcome to Heroes of Brand Protection Podcast, episode 37. I'm your host, Daniel Shapiro, Senior Vice President of Strategic Partnerships at RedPoints, the most widely used AI platform to combat online fraud. Our mission is to make the internet safer for both brands and consumers. In this podcast, we will share stories and industry insights from some of the leading experts in brand protection and anti-counterfeiting from many different industries. We are so happy you could join us today, and please check out all of our episodes on www.redpoints.com/podcast. Today, we are delighted to have the opportunity to speak with Mirta Hurtado-Rivas, General Counsel for Brands and Marketing Properties, Anti-Counterfeiting and Licensing at Nestle. Mirta is a dedicated individual with passion for fashion and crafts. Coming from a family of lawyers, she discovered her enthusiasm for international public law and diplomacy. While initially involved with the United Nations, a fortuitous encounter during a train ride with her friend led her to intellectual property office. She has been an integral part of Nestle for over 2 years, successfully navigating the challenges that come with working for such a large, dynamic company. Join our conversation with Mirta as we uncover her passion, dive deep into her career, and how she protects Nestle's customers from malicious online actors. Mirta, thank you so much for joining us today. We're thrilled to have you on the podcast and looking forward to learning more about you.
Thank you so much for the invitation. My pleasure to be here.
Well, great. Well, before we get going, I thought maybe I'd ask you, if there were an extra hour in the day, there turned out to be 25 hours instead of 24, is there something you would use that extra hour to do?
Definitely. I think I'd love to take time to catch up even more often with my friends, because with the hectic life we have, it's like, and friends are important, but somehow I don't find the time to get in touch with them regularly. So I love to have this extra hour to kind of have, you know, what we have during COVID, just like the drink over Zoom or over Teams and just, you know, hearing in as to how people are.
Yeah, that's funny. That is one of those things that sort of disappeared on us once we got back into the game of it all. When you think about some of the experiences you've had over time, and not necessarily at your current job, but could have been in a previous role, but when you're hanging out with your friends, maybe having a glass of wine or a beer, and you tell a funny work story or whatever, is there some sort of story that just sticks out as a crazy funny thing you've dealt with at one of your jobs in your past?
Yeah, there is. So I was blessed because my first job in the industry, I was with a team that was really very diverse. We were freshly created. We had just acquired a company, a local company, and then this was part of a multinational. We were this new team created out of nothing, and then with this, you know, do something out of it. And one of my lawyers was constantly kind of picking on my assistant, but they were kind of playfully doing things. And one day, this lawyer came into the morning into the office, and everything was taped to the desk. Like, you know, everything, like his mouth was taped, like all folders were taped to each other, like all, you know, cupboards he wanted to open, everything was taped. Like literally, even weeks later, when we were in meetings and I'll say to him, pass me this, he would kind of grab something and would still be taped. You know, at that time we still had phones, right? And pick up phone, no, the entire phone would come with it. So I think just that period of time when it was the start of me being new to the real, you know, working in the industry. And it was just fantastic because it was such a fun team. And they always were trying to, you know, to do type of tricks or whatever to each other. And so it was, I must say, there was not 1 week without something happening that would make us laugh as a team and have fun as a team.
Yeah, that's hysterical. It reminds me of when I first started at eBay. It was very common if someone walked away from their desk, didn't turn off their laptop or did something, someone would prank you, someone would lower your seat, someone would take your laptop and put a picture on it. People are always doing stuff. You had to sort of keep your guard up a little bit, you know, when you left your desk.
That's just great, right? It's just, it gives a positive vibe to your entire day.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And then thinking about when you were growing up as a young person, thinking about maybe what you want to do. Or even today, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? In case you're not finished, you know, you're growing up. But is there something you wanted to do when you grow up?
So Since I was very young, I've always been fascinated by fashion. And very early on, I started sewing and doing my own clothes and knitting. So, you know, manual work and handcrafts were my passion, still my passion today. And I wanted to do that as a profession. But then, you know, reality comes in and plays a big role. And I'm the daughter of immigrants. So obviously my parents wanted to aim high for us. So choosing to become someone who does handiwork was not so much in their plans. They wanted us to use our brains and insisted on us going to university and learning something proper, as they said at that time. Today, they're much more flexible with the grandchildren, but with us, it was out of question. So I ended up being a lawyer. But yes, I've always had this passion for doing things like, you know, sewing for me, it's just a very relaxing hobby. But at the same time, I think it's just the creativity there is just amazing.
And do you still enjoy fashion from a shopping perspective? Is it something you enjoy going into stores and seeing what people are doing and what's trending? And is that still, even though you're not doing that per se from a craft perspective, but you still like the...
I still do that. Like I have like, I still have my sewing projects going on. I still find time to do that. And then I have something in mind and I know I want to pair that to that specific bag I saw somewhere, or I want to wear those specific shoes that I saw. And then, you know, I'm either when I travel for business, I take the time to sneak out and look at those things that you don't find it everywhere, right? Like not the common stream stuff. And today it's so much easier, right? To follow kind of the unusual on social media. It's much easier than before where you had really to go almost hunting, you know, the small kind of designers and upcoming trendy designers in cities where you were not living. So yeah, that's still something I like a lot. And I like also to do it a lot with my girlfriends when we go on city trips.
Yeah, I'm sure that's fun. I happen to be a fashion guy too. I enjoy going into looking at, I was a buyer for Macy's. So I enjoy going into stores, seeing how things are lit. We had a family business. I look at lighting and fixtures and I look at the product and all that stuff. It's still very intriguing. How did you, when you decided to have to use your brain like your parents asked you to do and go to universities and become a lawyer, how did you pick this profession?
So I think it's kind of funny because my father is a lawyer himself. He was a Supreme Court judge in Peru. He was a prosecutor. He was a professor in Switzerland. He's been a criminal law professor. My mother was into law as well. And so not surprising, myself and my sister, we did law too. And I think it was not so much because we found it very interesting or sexy, but it was very much because it was really what was being talked about every day at home. And so criminal law was
the family business.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like this is what, you know, what makes your family just like, you know, go. And I was very much interested into criminal law, but because that was already kind of the specialty of my dad, I said, no way, like he is famous and he's in his domain. And, you know, this is going to be just suicide for me if I want to try to overcome his level of knowledge and experience. And so I did study international public law and international private law at the time, aiming into going into diplomacy or working at international organizations. So that's what I aimed at. So I was not into IP at all.
And then sort of taking that one step further, how did your career progress? Meaning, how did you get to where you're at today from a progression perspective?
So as I said, I never aimed at studying IP. Actually, during my law school, there wasn't even IP as a course at that time. You had to pick it, you know, separately, and I didn't because that's not what I wanted to do. I went, my first stop was I went back to Peru to work there as a lawyer in a law firm. And from there, actually, I had applied some time ago to work at the UN as an intern, right? And when I was there, I got this call and said, yeah, you know, we have a position for you. And I'm like, oh, great. Now I'm Latin America and I have to go all the way back. And I did work for almost a year at the United Nations Drug Control Program at the time in Vienna. And got to see actually what international organizations do, what the United Nations in particular does, what diplomacy is. And then I was lucky enough also to get a scholarship for doing a master degree at the Diplomatic Academy of Vienna. And I was taking on this kind of direction because it's what I wanted to do, in particular, women rights and minority rights at that time. But once I started working in the different areas, I quickly realized that to become an ambassador, it would take me at least 20 years, and that would need political support, right? It's in many countries, in particular in Peru at the time, very political roles. And I'm not much of a political person. I speak my mind up, you know, easily. So not easy to deal with that. And international organizations, it was very interesting, but the issue was that things were extremely slow. And it would always depend of who is in charge of that particular term and the international organization. As soon as there was a change, everything would change. So as I'm someone who likes to see the result of what I do, I quickly realized that I would have to learn how to be patient, not only during a certain period of time, but in the long haul. And then decided that was not what I wanted. So pretty much from 1 month to the other, I decided I need to change roles. And I was lucky enough to cross a friend in a train who said to me, "What you're up? How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm coming back and I'm in Switzerland. I need a job on January 1st. I need to pay my bills." And he said, "Oh, you know what? The intellectual property office is looking for examiners." I'm like, I have no clue about intellectual property and even less about what they do there. And he said, "Well, but you speak the three national languages, you know, that's an asset." And they're looking desperately because it was the time of the internet bubble, right? You know, we all the offices had so many trademark applications and so on. So I just took a chance and that's how it started. I started there and actually 18 months later, I was already managing one of the examination groups. And since then, I got stuck with IP and trademarks in particular. And yeah. Here I am.
That's a wonderful story. All because of a train ride, huh?
All because of train ride and all because of a friend, right? That was generous enough to share because that's also something, right? It's not because you meet people, but then people also need to be really generous and share what they know in a way, even though they may think that you're competing with them.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the great story of sort of when you talk about people and career paths and journeys, sometimes things happen at different times in your life that sort of change the trajectory, right? Or things go on. And so it's a good story that you shared with us. So thank you very much. And then for those who are joining us today on this podcast and may not know exactly, although it's hard to believe, but in case they don't know Nestle and some of the things you're, you know, where you're headquartered, where you're based, how many offices around the world does Nestle have or whatever. Maybe that's just something of interest that people may not know about.
Sure. So, you know, Nestle, I think, is mostly known because of its food and beverages products, right? Nowadays, we do also, obviously, pet care products and also health science products. We are known to be the good food, good life company. You know, we are the ones that believe that the power of food can enhance everyone's life. And we are based in Vevey, which is in a very beautiful surrounding in Switzerland at the Geneva Lake. So we see the beautiful lake and the mountains. So we have a great, great headquarters there. We operate in over 180 countries, I think 188 to be precise. And the number of employees varies because that depends on the day you check that. But we are over 275,000 employees. And I think that's quite big, quite impressive.
Wow. Yeah,
and
of course.
I think what is nice since I joined, because I've been interested about these questions before, is also that Nestle is really also doing a lot to make sure that we have a gender balance when it comes to management and so on. So today we have already around, I think, 45% of middle and senior management are female, which is a great change since in the last decade, for instance. And we are trying to be more and more diverse, not only with respect to gender. So that's a little bit what we're trying to achieve now. And we have something.
It's a wonderful goal.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know what else. You know, there's so much to, because the categories are so varied and our businesses are so different. I'm happy to add anything you might be interested in if there is something.
Just to sort of follow up on that, because that make it difficult. But if you were to describe Nestle in one sentence, how would you describe the company in one sentence?
Yeah, I like, you know, it's funny because I came from pharma. And pharma cannot be, you know, it's very different from food and beverages, right?
Yeah.
But I like to think about Nestle, that it's like the products, the passion that I see in the markets when I go and visit, is really everyone identifies Nestle with this kind of highly reputed household name. You know, every household almost has a Nestle product. And that is kind of, it relates to food, to cooking, to being together. So it's a very warm feeling that Nestle gives when you think about it. I always like to say, I think it's like, it's a company that makes taste buds dance and hearts happy. You know, it's like,
nice.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very different because it's all about what you eat, what you drink, and all of that for humans is very often connected to your culture, to good times, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. And then when you think about like your job in its current form today, is there a particular task that is more challenging than others or something that you have to sort of stay focused on in your particular role?
Well, as I was saying, I think the biggest challenge is really that we are so big. You know, big companies are very complex, they're very layered, you have a lot of stakeholders. The categories are very, very different, right? When you talk about, let's say, infant nutrition, and then you talk about water or coffee, those have, from a regulatory perspective, from just a need of the customer perspective, it's so different that you have to also have different legal skills to tackle the issues that come up. So I think for me, I think the extensive portfolio of food and beverages makes it difficult to make sure that we take harmonized and aligned decisions in the best interest of the company, always trying to preserve the consumer and our reputation. And I think because we love to give a lot of independence to the markets, because a lot of our products are also local products. It's not only kind of global products, but a lot of the products are local. You need to leave freedom to the markets at the same time, they still need to be reined into a system that allows us to have a system in place. And that, as a legal function, is never easy, in particular because you want to be an enabler, not a no-sayer.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the challenges navigate around that.
Yeah. Well, and you're in the business of mitigating risk of different kinds of risks. And at the same time, all those independences that you talked about, those products, sort of not necessarily the antithesis, but it challenges that risk a little bit to let them do their markets, et cetera, a little bit probably.
We do also handle, everything which is soft IP, but we do also a lot of review of labels, and we do review brand communication, sustainability claims, for instance, which is not common for an IP department to do. So that's very different, doing sustainability claim review from filing a trademark.
Sure.
It's two different things. We manage the entire licensing system for the company between thousands of entities. So we have thousands of agreements already internally, and then I'm not counting even those external, all managed via the team. And then we do also anti-counterfeiting, which again, is very different because we have to manage external stakeholders like customs police, any type of governmental authorities. So also very different tasks, right? The role is broad, and the team needs to have very diverse capabilities for us to be on top of these things. And as you correctly said, mitigate these risks, which are, as you well said, very different one from the other.
Yeah. And on that note, Mirta, when you think about, you know, that risk perspective in your team, do you tend to focus on, I guess, maybe gray market, that is your product showing up on, I don't know, marketplace or website that maybe not be authorized? Or do you see in certain categories of your product more challenges in the counterfeiting of your product, or, you know, protecting that anti-counterfeiting?
Yep.
Is one bigger or worse than another or challenging?
I think it depends very much on the category of the product that we are speaking about. For instance, when we speak about infant formula, you can imagine even that incorrect storing or shipping of a product can jeopardize the quality. And because we are giving the product to infants, even a gray market product can be a big risk, and we need to focus on it and to remediate or minimize that risk to the widest extent possible. But now then afterwards, there is other products like coffee that when it's counterfeited, it's not so much that the coffee itself in most of the cases is not, you know, damaging the person directly. It's just a question, the quality is very poor of the coffee that has been used to replicate our own coffee. So I think that, you know, we always need to, so from our perspective, we always have this kind of scheme where we go through and say, the first question that we ask to prioritize is, how high is the risk for the consumer? and the higher the risk for the consumer, they would just jump up on our list. And as we're tackling both parallel trade, gray market, and anti-counterfeiting, we then just loop in the different teams who support that. So it's not that there is a prioritization between the two, it's just really more where could be the negative impact be the highest for the consumer. That's where we go first.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Protecting the consumer risk and the brand risk, you know, both are out there. And when you think about the portfolio, and you mentioned it just briefly in one of your other answers, but how do you prioritize the use of your teams, you know, throughout those different challenges that you have?
So I think I don't think there's a secret recipe for this, right? All multinational companies and even mid-size and small companies have the same challenges. You always have limited resources and you need to do more every year than we did before. Thanks God, technology helps a lot, right? So, and I will not go into all of what has happened during the last decade, but we all know that 10 years ago, we did things very differently than today. And today we are able to cope with much more than we did 10 years ago. So that's one thing. Technology needs to be at the top of our minds. We need to be always be, you know, developing ourselves to be capable of using those tools and always being out there looking for the right tools to, you know, increase efficiency and simplify things. But the other thing is for many years already, and Nestle is no different to other companies, we have a good mix between offshoring, outsourcing, and then keeping certain tasks at headquarter level. So we need to have teams that are supportive in different locations, and outsourcing started many years ago in the trademark area, and we continue to do so and think it works very well. We have big teams that are offshore and outsource, so who are not directly working for Nestle, but for us via a service provider. And I think that's quite a good mix. And that together then with the digitalization or automation that I mentioned before, that allows us actually to, you know, continue to learn, to be able to then tackle all the different tasks that we are to be delivering.
Yeah, makes total sense. And then when you think about, you know, these challenges that face your business, do you foresee something, anything specific in the world of sort of the challenge of brand protection in the, you know, fast moving consumer goods space? Is there a trend that you see taking place at this particular time or something you might want to highlight?
Well, I think there's always, I think, two elements. One is the never ending changes of the regulatory framework, because we see that, like, you know, governments are more and more inclined to find ways as to how to direct or nudge the consumer into eating in a more conscious way, in a healthier way. So there is a lot of regulation there, and it's really never ending, and every country is tackling this differently. So again, it's kind of how do you stay on top of all those changes and make sure that you're compliant, but also make sure that you continue to serve the consumer needs, right? The demand that they have. I think that's one thing that definitely is a challenge. And we've seen a lot of those new regulations coming up during the last 2 years since I joined Nestle, for instance. The other thing is, and that's a key challenge, is obviously the rise of e-commerce and the digital marketplaces. Because for food, traditionally, before COVID, there was in some countries already, you know, online commerce going on and so on. But COVID did accelerate this a lot. And now there is even, you know, more and more, and there's also an emphasis from companies wanting to grow that sector. But what happens with growing e-commerce and digital marketplaces is also just the fact that we have more unauthorized sellers, the counterfeiters, parallel trade, and so on. It comes with a lot of more risk. So how to tackle that risk, but at the same time, allowing your business to be creative, out there, getting the visibility that they need, and keeping reputation and consumer safe is really a problem.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we hear the most, I think, about when the, you know, sort of this post-COVID trend, people are always shopping on e-commerce and having a digital footprint. But I think today that digital footprint is really accelerated, and things that you would have only ever bought in a store, you know, that I don't know that there's that many things maybe outside of milk or something, but, you know, most everything else that you used to only think of ever only buying in a store now are bought digitally via e-commerce. So it changed the nature of a lot of processes for sure.
Definitely. If I may add, I think one of the things that is kind of, and that's an underlying factor for all industries, I think, is the obviously the kind of the trend of AI and what it means, right? We all knew AI was out there. AI is not new. It's already, you know, from past century. But what it's doing now and the, you know, the increased development of machine learning. And so it's not only in our favor, right? For counterfeiters and for people who have not the best interests in mind, they also draw creativity and innovation from that. And so it's even more difficult to stay on top of all these developments when you see that those developments and what you actually have created can be so quickly copied. So I think that's so crazy.
Yes. And when you think about just your industry or your you know, colleagues from around the world in different businesses, but sometimes there's this myth about the profession. You know, you IP lawyers, you're all, you know, is there something we should debunk that, no, we're not all just, you know, not funny, or I don't know what the myth is, but is there a myth out there?
So you see, for me, it's the other way around, because I think trademark lawyers in particular are always being seen as the more fun people, because we are the ones who are close to marketing. You know, we are not the ones who sit with the scientists. We are the ones that do the cool slogans, who have the cool colors, who go, you know, we go to, when our business wins something, so we are invited to the launch parties, you know. So I think we are known as the more kind of easygoing, trendy lawyers. So we are not antitrust, right? Or we are not compliance, less fun, or, you know, any of those, right? They're far more serious people. We are the ones who are still very creative, you know, we are the ones who are constantly online. And also on the other end, I think for at least for most of the intellectual property lawyers, we have very often just more than just our national reach. We work always, you know, across jurisdictions, and that makes us just a bit, you know, open. We see and interact with a lot of people who are not of our own nationality, you know, or culture. So I believe we are quite fun.
Very good. Well, then I'll stick with that. So I'm not sure if you know Julien Dudouis, but he and I work together at eBay. He's the head of global brand relations for eBay. And he was our guest recently on our podcast. And he had a question for you, which is, what has been one of your most unique experience in the brand protection field that you've had so far as you've been working?
It's actually quite a difficult question to answer. But I think one of the things that's impressed me a lot, and this is in my current role because I tried to link it to what I'm doing now, is really I went to a retreat in the at the bottom of the Himalayas last year. And while then doing a hike, this was one of the activities of that retreat, we really walked for several hours. And then there was like a little kitchen where we could kind of, you know, have a snack and drink something. We just happened to come across a Maggie sign, which was huge, like, you know, out of the nowhere, you're just trees and everything is green. You have monkeys all around you. You're going up to a temple and then turning one of the coffee places, so to say, you know, where people restore themselves, which was really tiny, had this enormous Maggie signs. And then my colleague that was with me, who is not a Nestle person, colleague in the sense of also an intellectual property lawyer, talked to the person and said, well, she is Nestle. She is the Maggie person. And you cannot imagine these faces of these people sitting there. Like, people kind of come to me, hug me, and thank me. And I was like, what's happening here? And I'm saying this because it's like, you know, for me, Nestle was quite a new company still then, and I felt a connection, but more than anything else, it was a connection to my legal community within the company, to my colleagues, to my business. But that was one of the first time where I saw really people loving the brand. This Maggie brand in India is so important. It's like for them, it's like something that's part of the life, and that they kind of connect with so much positivity that even a foreign person going up there and being told that she is the brand person at Nestle created this kind of moment of warmth and sharing. Very unique. I think it's, I had similar experiences in pharma, totally different, but I think this was my latest one. And it just, you know, I was like kind of happy. I'm like, yeah, good decision to work with this company.
That's a good one. That's a good feel good story. I like that. What advice would you give to a young person who wants to pursue a career similar to yours and you run into them? What would be your advice to that person?
I would say try to enjoy the journey and not be desperate. I think I never thought about making a career in the sense of I didn't have a plan. You know, there are so many discussions around what you need to have done until you're 20, 30, whatever, and all these steps and levels you have to cross. I think things happen naturally when you're passionate about what you do and when you try to give your best at any time. And then, you know, surround yourself with people who appreciate you and give a, you know, helping hand to all those around you. Because if you do that, others will do the same for you. And that's actually the best way to progress. It's not like walking on top of others. It's walking with others. And those others will be actually your kind of jumping board. And that's worked fantastically well for me. And I'm trying to do the same for others. So that would be my recommendation.
That's great advice. I love that. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's good for anybody, whether they're pursuing a career like yours or pursuing any career. That's good advice. So thank you. What would you like to ask our next guest?
So my question would be, if you could pick one tool in the intellectual property area based on AI, machine learning in particular, what should that tool be able to do for you?
Oh, that's a great question. What would be your one tool?
I know that there is already tools that are trying to come up with brand names by not looking at what's available, but in the sense that instead of looking for creating first names and then doing the research, is you create while you search. So you know, it's like when you have a forest.
Yes.
You don't go for where there is trees, but they go only for where there is empty spots. And that combines. So the machine learning device does the following. It takes your criteria and says, I want a name of three syllables, connotation of this, that is readable in these languages, and then doesn't include an X, a Y, or a W, and is in class 9 in these countries. And then it goes and spits it out, and that would save you 12 weeks and cost probably a tenth.
Awesome. All right. So here's our final question for you. It's 4 questions in 15 seconds. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Your favorite music, band, or singer?
Olivia Rodrigo.
Ah, very nice. And your favorite book?
Life of Pi.
Ah, okay. And if you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Ají de gallina. It's a Peruvian dish.
Okay, good, because I don't know what that is. And then lastly, what is your go-to source to keep up with all things in your field? What's the go-to resource?
My colleagues.
Your colleagues. Very good. Will Mirta, thank you so much for joining us. We had a great time today. Thank you, and I hope it was fun for you as well.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Mirta, it was very interesting to learn about your journey. I would like to highlight a couple key takeaways from our conversation today. Number one, Nestle always prioritizes customer safety, which are not only associated with counterfeiting, but with gray market as well. Incorrect storage or shipping of food products can jeopardize the quality, posing significant risk to consumers. Number two, Mirta encourages young professionals to embrace the journey and avoid desperation. True advancement is achieved by walking alongside others and not standing on top of them. Well, that's it for us today. You can follow us on all of our platforms, Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music, as well as X and LinkedIn. Don't want to miss another new episode that goes live? Subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Make it a good day.